going to be 95. I don't like that idea at all.
Technically, in the summer. Hey, guys.
Hi. Hello. Hello. And welcome to The Clatch. You're listening to The Voice of Vashon 101.9 on sweet Vashon Island. We're so glad you're here. We're here, kind of, in one piece today. This is a place where we talk about current issues, foibles, funnies, tragedies, local world and other world. You name it and we'll talk about it. Someone once said we are the three busiest mouths on Vashon, and I don't know if that's a compliment or not, but I love it. I'm Linda Nygaard, your host for some reason or another. Yeah. And the other two busy mouths here are Heidi Skrypek. Hello. And Susan McCabe.
Hey,
hello.
Guys.
Today we're going to talk about a lot of stuff, but first I'd like to talk a little bit about COVID and where we're at with all of our new freedoms.
Do you want us to say something about that?
I'd like it if you'd say something. I can say something.
Well, I wasn't thinking about freedoms. I was thinking about the new variant, the Delta variant that is sweeping the country. It's more contagious. It's
more deadly.
Is it more deadly?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's primarily for people who are not vaccinated, right. I presume.
Correct.
I think we're still protected by the vaccine.
We're
doing great in Washington, and variant really is almost a non-factor here, but in the Southeast, of course.
Yeah.
In the Deep South, where people have there's less high vaccination rates, it's happening. It's catching on. Hospitalizations are quicker, longer. Unfortunately, it's hitting younger population, and it is holding me up from a green light going to the UK to go do my swim.
Is it?
Why?
Well, I'm going to have to quarantine for 10 days.
Yeah.
And it's not my fault.
Wow.
They're trying to get Great Britain more double vaxxed in preparation for incoming travelers from other countries, just in case they happen to be carrying the Delta on their backs.
Yeah. Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Well, the only COVID update I have, other than I'm really enjoying going out and seeing people. I love seeing people. I'm still wearing my mask, being cautious a lot of times, grocery store, et cetera. But did you guys know that there's a parade on July 7th in New York City to honor all of the medical personnel and first responders, et cetera?
No, that is great.
Oh, it's fabulous. But there's a little faction of our helpers that did not get acknowledged for that. That's the funeral workers.
Oops. That's kind of a huge one considering.
It's really big.
Half a million people are died.
And talking about the sacrifices those people made, and then they're working with all the bodies that are COVID infested, and then they have to go home. And so, they're feeling kind of left out. And I don't know if there's, I read this, when did I read this? On the 16th of June. So I don't know if there's been any change now for the July 7th parade, but I'm certainly hoping so, because the funeral workers, funeral directors, and all those people need respect for what they did
and
what they had. And gratitude. Yeah. Exactly.
Awful.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So that was a big oversight on the mayor's part.
Massive.
Big. Yeah.
Whoopsie. Yeah.
Poor de Blasio.
I know.
But, he's getting it from all sides.
But I don't care. This is one quote from one of the funeral workers who said, "So many of us in the funeral industry have gone through a truly traumatic experience dealing with the number of deaths. The fact that we had to leave our families and then jeopardize them when we came back home to take care of people passing away. Too often you only hear about funeral homes and directors when something goes wrong and there's a problem. You don't often hear and acknowledge the services they're providing at this time. It's a great opportunity to acknowledge all the dedication and work. It's a 24-hour service, you know."
Oh, yeah.
So, thank you, funeral industry.
We appreciate you.
Wow.
Thank you. Lisa Devereaux here on the island has
that's right. Yes.
And I don't know if she was one of the busiest ones. I think we were pretty lucky here on Vashon.
Oh,
yeah,
sure.
I don't know. We had last I heard, we had 121 total
cases, but not deaths.
Maybe I don't
know. Maybe 3 or 4 deaths.
I think 4. Yeah, yeah.
This is not COVID related, but I know you guys have seen the Barbie dream hearse that rides through town. It's a white hearse, and on the side it's in font, in pink font.
No, I haven't seen it.
The Barbie font. It says Barbie dream hearse.
Wow. No, I love that. Whose is it?
I don't know. We need to know.
Well, we have to find this out.
It is amazing.
Oh, that's funny.
All right. If you know anything about the Barbie Dream Hearse out there, you need to send that information to the Clatch at voiceofvashon.org.
Definitely. Thank you. Definitely.
Any more COVID?
No, I was I was bringing levity there.
Thank you. I like your levity. We missed it. We missed it. Hey, so, you know, we like spiders, right?
Sure.
Yeah. Sure we do. Guess what? Researchers have created a plant-based, sustainable, scalpable material that could replace single-use plastics in many consumer products.
Oh, man.
And it's made from spider silk.
Really?
It was created using a new approach for assembling plant proteins into materials that mimic silk on a molecular level. So, you know, there was a lot of science that went into it. And the material is home compostable.
Sure.
Cambridge developed it, and it requires no chemical modifications. The new product will be commercialized by Xampla, X-A-M-P-L-A. A University of Cambridge spin-out company.
A spin-out company?
Yeah, from the university.
Cute, pun intended.
Yeah. Whoa. You think? Oh, good one.
They
good
can just
one.
Come to my house and collect all my damn spider webs.
Yeah, really?
In the rafters. I'm such a terrible housekeeper, and I can't clean those things up.
I'm sure that I could rival your
lack
house
of justice.
Oh, we all could. That's the least of our concerns. Anyway, one more thing about this.
Yeah.
They're not quite there yet, but because very little is known about self-assembly of plant proteins. So they're researching. Okay. PhD candidates are researching, and they're working directly with silk materials as a replacement for plastic.
That's awesome.
I was over
the
moon.
That is really cool. So I'm wondering how spider silk compares with worm silk that makes silk.
Absolutely.
I know.
And how is it different?
And why spider silk
and not
better?
Worm silk.
I don't know.
Maybe worm silk is too expensive.
Well,
spiders are more. I don't know.
They're probably easy
cool
to breed.
Idea.
Spiders,
yeah.
Like
spiders.
Think about
that's true.
Those
yeah.
nests with the hundreds of babies that come out. It's probably really scalable. Is that another spider joke? Scaling the wall.
Scalable spiders.
I think you did, yeah.
Oh my God.
That's another spider pun.
Not
it would be a spun.
Yeah.
Well, it's a little bit of hope in a huge plastic problem that we have.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Plastic is my biggest bugaboo.
Ugh.
Don't use it, folks.
I know.
Now that it exists, it's like everything that is on the planet, I just want to reuse until I cannot reuse it anymore.
I know.
Exactly.
I know. Over and over and over and over. So are you guys walkers? You are, Susan.
Yeah.
You walk every day, don't you?
I do.
Yeah. And are you a walker? Do you ever walk? You don't
you
swim.
I need to be though. I know Mom and I were just talking about this. I need to walk more.
Do
you? It's good for me.
It's good for it's good. Well, I read an article not too long ago about how slow walking can increase your emotional stability.
Okay.
And it's sort of like you pick a route to walk. And maybe you're walking every day. You're walking that same route every day, and it takes you 30 minutes. And you puff, 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 and you're walking to get it over with. Well, he says within the first 20 minutes, you should just walk very slowly and deliberately, and you'll find that your whole being feels better. He said it was really difficult for him at first because he's used to rushing, walking, and, you know, wanting to get
power walking.
And then he said after the first 5 minutes, it all changed. And he said he started to look around, started to notice things. He saw a woman greeting a man. He saw some new flowers, that kind of thing. And he said everything seemed different during those 20 minutes when he was slow walking. He said he felt his head getting heavier and then all of a sudden lighter.
And he fell over.
And then he fell over. But basically what he's talking about is walking, and we need to walk.
Yeah.
And this is... and this is precisely the secret held by all those who go by foot. Life is prolonged when you walk. Walking expands time.
I have to agree with that.
Yeah.
So, you know, I have to laugh because this is how I feel about self-help books, particularly written by men, but by anybody who decides that they're the person to discover something that everybody else knows about.
Well,
they make a self-help book out of it. He apparently has not done that.
No, he's talking about the philosopher Erling Kage.
Okay.
In walking one step at a time, which is what this philosopher recommends.
With so, intention behind
with
that.
With intention.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Cool. And I don't mean to ridicule it. Just
yes, you do.
Yes, I do.
Yes, you do. And I think it's mean. But, you know, speed determines our perception of time.
Yes.
It
does.
Well, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
I was and have been that person when I do take walks with my mom, like, okay, we're going to get our steps in and we're going to power through this get some cardio and squeeze your butt and let's go.
And let's go. Don't forget those Kegels when you're rocking.
No doubt.
that's not easy.
There is. You should try it. It's like, never mind.
Pat your head.
Can you walk it? Exactly.
Chew gum?
Chew gum, work your Kegels and walk. Then you do fall over.
Okay, one more.
Crowd right there, Susan.
One more comment on walking. There's a secret bond between slowness and memory, and there's a secret bond between speed and forgetting. The degree of slowness is directly proportional to the intensity of the memory, and the degree of speed is directly proportional to the intensity of forgetting.
Wow. That explains a lot.
It does?
In my life.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. In general. Okay.
No, totally does.
Okay, one more tidbit, since we're in our tidbits thing.
Okay, good.
Have you ever eaten fish sticks?
God, not since I was a child.
Yes.
Well, you?
In childhood.
Yeah, in childhood. Well, we all ate them in childhood. And did you know that they're under a patent, and they were invented. Yeah, they're patented.
Fish sticks. Sure.
And they were invented in 1953 when General Foods released them under the Bird's Eye label. And they were part of a lineup of some newly introduced rectangle foods, which included chicken sticks, ham sticks, veal sticks, eggplant sticks, and dried lima bean sticks. And so, you know, only the fish sticks survived.
I could see why.
I'm actually kind of impressed that Bird's Eye was the first company to come out with them. I don't know why.
I don't either.
I should remember the Gorton's fisherman.
The Gorton guy. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I kind of like the idea of the rectangle food group.
Yes.
Well, how about
it's a thing?
The rectangle
dried food? Lima bean stick.
Really?
No, I don't think so. Mm. So, you know, there was a whole South Park episode devoted to fish sticks.
But wasn't it like it was fish dicks and they made a whole thing about
Really? Yeah, it was fish dicks. I wasn't going to say it, but I guess we can say that.
I can say dicks.
It's not on the list.
Okay, and then when Queen Elizabeth II celebrated, this will kill you. When Queen Elizabeth II celebrated her 90th birthday in 2016, Bird's Eye presented her with a sandwich valued at $257 that included blanched asparagus, saffron mayonnaise, edible flowers, caviar, and most prominently, gold leaf encrusted fish sticks.
Oh my God.
Did she eat it?
But, well, how do I know?
Good question.
I didn't ask her. I'll ask her next time.
Yeah.
But the fish sticks solved a problem that had been created by technology, was that they had too much fish. So then they were trying to, there's a whole process they tried to go through about how to do this. And they would catch all these fish, bone them, and then freeze them. And so what ended up happening was they froze in great big blocks, a block of fish. And they tried to sell that to the grocery stores because they thought that the housewives could come in and just chip off a block of fish, however much they needed.
Okay.
Well, that didn't work very well. So they were sold as fish bricks.
Oh.
Can you imagine? But the success came when the bricks were cut into standardized sticks.
Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, they first run the frozen fish through x-rays to make sure there's no bones in them. And then they do this freezing thing. And then they slice them and bread them and run them through the thing. And voila, fish sticks.
The bone x-ray thing is bothersome to me. Like,
it is.
Like x-rays.
X-rays?
I know.
Yeah. No wonder we're all getting cancer. Just kidding.
Yeah.
Not to mention whatever preservatives they put in there.
Well, and the other thing is, you know, really, they resemble chicken tenders. I mean, that's kind of the same thing, you know.
Yeah.
But they're known as the ocean's hot dogs.
Oh, okay. That's appropriate.
And really, the climate impact of fish sticks is small. It's
that's good.
I was surprised at how low it was, says Brandy McEwen, a postdoctoral researcher at University of California. Each kilogram of fish sticks produces about 1.3 kilograms of carbon dioxide, which rivals the climate impact of tofu.
Ah,
so
nice.
I guess
does
that's
just mean
news.
We should eat more fish.
We should eat more fish. It says being
in general, though.
Yeah,
when
yeah.
environmental impacts, it's interesting to learn about this.
I know, yeah. Very interesting. Beef, on the other hand, produces over 100 times that amount.
Dang.
Per kilogram.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
So anyway, I haven't had a fish stick in 1,000 years, and I don't know that I will. But I just think they're funny.
You have not piqued my fish stick appetite with this story.
Oh, darn.
It's not wet.
Your appetite is not wetted.
Darn it. Damn it.
Wet.
Yeah.
Speaking of wet.
Wet.
Oh, yes. Welcome back to our mermaid.
Yes,
Heidi's
mermaid
Scrubhead.
Heidi.
Woo. I'm
where's our music?
No.
Sorry.
Oh, no. There's no music for
not
this.
Not yet.
No, you have to sing to me.
Oh, do I have,
we
to,
have
sing
to sing
to you?
Okay. You can
do the Elvis.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
For she's a jolly good fellow. For she's a jolly good fellow.
I don't know
fellow,
any mermaid songs.
For she's a jolly good
woo-hoo.
Fish person. And
so,
nobody can deny.
How was it?
Oh, it was, okay, so I went to Coronado, California, my hometown, and I swam 18.6 kilometers around Coronado.
Oh,
that is stunning. Stunning.
Yeah.
So, Glorieta Bay Park. All the way around Coronado, North Island, and then to the front of North Island and Coronado Beach, all the way past the Hotel del Coronado, past all of the towers, which are called the Coronado Shores, to the very last tower. At the end of that is the border between Coronado proper and the amphibious base.
Mm-hmm.
And I swam to Gator Beach. So that was a 12-mile swim, my first marathon swim.
Wow.
Oh, oh, oh.
Incredible.
Congratulations, Heidi. That's
there
really something.
Yeah.
Wow.
There can't be a whole lot of other people who do this.
I'm
this
sure
is like
not.
Superhuman.
There's about 30 people who've swum it.
Yeah.
That's not very many people.
Yeah. It was fun. And so I did it as a tandem marathon swim with another person who has been my pacemate here in the Northwest. Mm-hmm. And so we did it together with two kayakers, and we were swimming along the bay. And it was really nice on the way out the low tide. It's not a huge tide like here. The tide exchange is a lot less. And we had a little tiny bit of tide assist going out. And then the bay got colder and choppier as you got out to open ocean.
Did it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there were battleships and pilots overhead, like choppers and really cool military aircraft screeching the sky as they landed in North Island. And
were they watching you? I mean, were they there to guide you?
The pilots were like kind of radioing into the kayaker what was going on. So, yeah.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah. Fabulous.
And it was gray and it was windy because we had the June gloom. It wasn't like today on Vashon Island.
Yeah,
it was
a
very cold day. And the water was not too bad. There was a pocket in the bay that got really cold, maybe high 50s, low 60s. And you're not wearing a wetsuit. You're just in a bathing suit, cap, goggles. And so that was hard. I'm a little faster, I learned, than my tandem mate. So I had to keep stopping and waiting for her. And that makes you really cold. That part was hard. We fed every 30 minutes off the kayak, which means a warm liquid drink.
Oh, okay.
So I would do carbohydrate drink, and then I would do apple cider drink every other. So I would alternate those two all the way through. And that helps you from getting dehydrated while you're working out so hard. And it also keeps you from getting hypothermia, because over time you will get cold.
Yeah, I wondered about that. Did you do you grease up with Vaseline or
anything? I was just going to ask that.
I did tons of Vaseline. So David put kitchen gloves on, and I packed some Vaseline. And so, yes, anywhere that the straps of your bathing suit would pull on you. So on top of the shoulders, a side boob, ridiculous amounts of Vaseline.
Mm-hmm.
Even just on the back of my neck, just for sighting and looking up with the swim cap on, around the hip area and between the legs and the thighs.
Yeah.
So I would think you'd do the whole body just to help stay warm. That's what I was thinking. But is that a fallacy of some sort?
Channel swimmers do it. They'll grease up like that sometimes.
Yeah, I thought I'd heard of
that. Yeah.
Did you see sea life? Did you have any friends in the water?
There was there were a couple sea lions on the channel markers on the way out of the bay. Yeah. I have to say, I did not see anything in the water other than kelp and some seagrass that would just kind of stick to my goggles and I'd pull it off. Mm-hmm. But my tandem mate, who was behind me quite a bit on the way into the open ocean, San Diego Bay has had two recent great white shark encounters with swimmers. So on New Year's Day or the December 31st, great white shark bit the fin of a swimmer right on Coronado Beach.
Wow.
And then more recently in April, a great white shark approximately 10 feet long circled a swimmer right in front of Coronado Beach. So
goodness.
Mary Sue, when she was swimming out from the jetty, saw a dark figure that looked quite a bit like a great white shark. And she told her kayaker, and the kayaker said, it was probably a sea lion. So I had on a thing around my ankle called a shark bands.
Yeah.
It's a really heavy duty magnet that repels most sharks.
Oh.
And it repels stingrays, which are part of the shark family. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I didn't know that. I knew they were venomous.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I don't want that. And they're known to be on Coronado Beach as the beach warms up. So, yes, I wore that. And it was good because I felt some sense of safety. But Mary Sue forgot hers.
Oh, dear.
So I believe it when she thinks she saw a great white shark. Yeah. She probably did.
She probably did.
Oi.
Oof.
I know. I would my pants.
In the water.
Heidi, when you're in the water and you're swimming, 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 and nothing else is happening, you're swimming, 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 what is your brain doing? Is it thinking? Is it projecting? What's going on in your mind? Or is there anything?
I'm totally 100% in the present.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking about my stroke and efficiency and kicking and pulling and all the body mechanics, every single stroke in the present. Other than looking at where I'm going, I'm not thinking about anything else. I'm not even hungry. And I just swam like a robot until Dan, the kayaker, said it's time for a feed.
Mm-hmm.
And he would just come up close, kayak really close to me and say, Heidi, it's time for a feed. And I could hear him because he's so close by. And so he would just hand me an open thermos ready to go. And I prepared all my feeds in advance.
Mm-hmm.
And I used really good double wall containers that stayed nice and toasty.
Oh, good.
But nothing else really in my head, but just go, just keep going, just keep going, just keep going. And when we turned the jetty, that's a little more than 3 miles of open ocean. And that you can see your final destination in moments because it's a swell. So you're in open ocean, you're rocking.
Oh, man.
I took seasick medication in advance. It's 8 hours. And I thought, my swim's going to take about 7 hours. So I'm covered. One dose before I jump in the water. But the seas would rise and you couldn't see your destination, the tower. So you just kind of had to look alongside the boat or yourself to see the kayaker. And then it would fall again in intervals and say up and then down and then up. So I'm just like, I know that my destination is there and it feels like it's close from a really long way away because those towers are so white and stark and visible. And I finally got there. And then he's like, you can swim in.
Oh, man.
Wow. How many hours did that take?
6 hours and 51 minutes.
Wow.
And incredible.
So when you got out, so I saw some photographs of you getting out and you were running and jumping and happy and full of energy.
You had enough energy to bounce.
Yeah. You know? So what was the first thing you did after you got out?
The very first thing, when you get out of the water, there's actually some really interesting rules that are incredibly important because you can be disqualified. It was a ratified swim.
Uh-huh.
And so I wanted to make sure I didn't get DQ'd after all that work.
Right.
Oh, God. Yes.
Right.
So you get out of the water and you have to run up to dry beach and there's a marker that I had to cross. Nobody's allowed to touch you. Not even greet you with a towel until you cross that marker.
Oh.
And so I was like, don't touch me, stay away from me. So the first thought was just, I wanted to run. That's why
you
were running.
Okay. Because
I just wanted to be
ran.
Done. And the wind was blowing, so I didn't want to get cold. So then after that, it was just nothing really. I was waiting for Mary Sue, just watching where she was in the ocean and making sure she was safe and going to make it. And then it was great, and I thought I would be starving, and I wasn't.
Oh, wow.
I wasn't at all. I ate a burrito later on. I was
Why is it always a burrito?
It's California, San Diego. You gotta eat
right. That's all they eat in California.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah.
When I'm down there, it's rolled tacos for sure.
Fish tacos.
So, no, that was it. All I was thinking was, cool, I did it. And then I thought, will I do this again? I don't think I'll do this one again, but I would like to do another marathon swim, but maybe even a smaller marathon swim next time. I don't need to go bigger.
So what constitutes a marathon?
That's a great question. It's 10 kilometers or more.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see.
In cap, goggle, swimsuit, following marathon swim rules.
So if you were going to do this again, is there anything you would do differently?
Find someone who's exactly my pace.
Okay.
Yeah. I would be curious to see what my real time would be if I hadn't had to stop so much.
Right.
You were swimming at about 2 miles per hour.
Yeah. Close.
Yeah. That's pretty fast right there.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
For open water, that's
not
bad.
I don't know how that translates into knots, but.
Yeah. I mean, there's some amazing swimmers in this world that do crazy stuff that I can't. It's not even in my mind because I wanted to do this to go around my hometown. And it was the coolest eye-level tour.
Yeah, I bet it was. Yeah, I'm sure it was.
So thank you. Yeah, it was
Well, we
really
are proud
fun.
To be able to call you friend.
Yes, we are.
And you are my swimspiration.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, that's excellent.
I got you.
Yeah.
Yay. You know what? We should do a quick moment of
Oh,
yes, we should.
Gratitude
thank
to
you.
Our fabulous supporters. I just need to get my business together and do it. Here we go.
Voice of Vashon thanks Windermere Real Estate for its support, making our community information programming and our emergency alert service possible. Find them on the web at WindermereVashon.com.
VOV programming support is provided by the Hardware Store Restaurant, serving great good food, free Wi-Fi, and signature cocktails in an historic 125-year-old building, the heartbeat of Vashon Island. On the web at thsrestaurant.com.
Dan, don't you listen to him, Dan. He's the devil, not a man. And he spreads the burning sands with water. Dan, can you see that big green tree where the water's running free? And it's waiting there.
This is a great song.
Water.
Sing it. Cool.
Ooh.
Clear.
Water.
Aww.
You know, that's really awesome. Great old song. I love that song. And the whole thing is about mirage and how there isn't any more water, you know. And he's a devil, not a man. And he spreads the burning sand with water. And so you think there's water there, but there isn't.
Which is kind of true of our planet at the moment.
That's kind of the correlation I was going to make. And having enough water might be a mirage for us in this day and age.
California's in a huge drought, by the way.
Huge.
Yeah.
One thing I wanted to mention quickly before I forget is that this weekend on Vashon is the lowest tide of the year. And so I'd like to encourage people to get out there and look and see what you can find because there's so much good stuff. But do not disturb the plankton and the eelgrass. There's babies in there sometimes.
There's all kinds of life out there. You don't disturb it. Just look at it.
You
know, before the pandemic, there used to be an annual low tide festival sponsored by the park district.
Yes.
I don't think they're doing it this year.
I don't think they are either.
So you can kind of do it yourself, but observe the good beach behavior rules.
We can do that.
Yeah, I can do that. Susan, you've been doing some studying about water and what's in it and how it all works. And I'd like to hear what you've been thinking about lately.
I am honored to be part of the whole Vashon project.
Right.
And there are a bunch of folks involved with that. Rondi Lightmark is the founder of it. She and Tag Gornal and I and some other wonderfully smart and well-informed people are focusing on water this year. And so one of the things we're doing is what I call an unbooth, because there are no booths at the Strawberry Festival this year, but we're going to have a booth right outside where the Strawberry Festival...
An unbooth.
Wait, go on. At 174th and Vashon Highway.
Okay.
And we're going to thank plankton. Because, folks, plankton, among many other things, produces 75% of the oxygen on the Earth.
Man.
What?
The oxygen that you breathe, baby, comes from
really?
Plankton.
Really? From plankton?
Mm. Yeah.
Thank you, plankton.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
So there are, I can tell you, let's see. We're calling it Thanks Plankton. And there are five reasons to thank plankton. It makes up, it says here, 95% of ocean life, because it feeds it.
Sure.
Forms the base of aquatic food webs. Generates half the atmosphere's oxygen. We said 75%.
Okay.
It absorbs, helps to absorb carbon emissions, which is how it can be a hero in the climate crisis.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
And our increasing emissions are harming them. The warming of the waters due to climate change, and which then causes the fish not to feed and the plankton not to grow. And the plankton feeds the fish. So, so I've got this little... Phytoplankton uses energy from sunlight to turn carbon dioxide into sugars. Zooplankton eats the phytoplankton. Small fish eat the zooplankton. Shellfish eat the zooplankton.
Oh.
Jellyfish eat the small fish and the zooplankton. Sea turtles eat jellyfish and small fish. Large fish eat small fish. Sea lions eat small fish. Seabirds eat small fish, jellyfish, and shellfish.
Oh,
sharks
wow.
eat small fish, large fish, sea lions, and sometimes swimmers. Toothed whale eats small fish, large fish, and sea lions. And the baleen whale eats zooplankton.
They're filter feeders. Yeah.
They're filter feeders, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. And the jellyfish are eating the swimmers lately here in Puget Sound.
Well, you said there's a plethora.
Guys, we have a massive bloom this year of jellyfish, and it's mostly those egg yolk jellies, which are getting as big as buoys. And,
wow. Oh, my goodness.
And lion's manes, huge amounts of lion's manes this year. I mean, I swim out there year-round, every year, and this year, by far, we are getting stung left and right.
Oh, gosh.
It's bad.
Tell me how jellyfish sting compares to nettle sting.
A lion's mane sting, in the water, just as you leave the water, you start to feel the sting. When you're in the seawater and you're getting stung, you don't really feel it that much. Mm. It's not until you get out.
Bummer.
I know. And then you really feel, it depends. Like if it's your arm and you're doing a recovery stroke, you can feel it. But otherwise you get out of the water and then you just feel this burn. It is a lot like a nettle sting in its appearance. You'll get those little welts, the urticaria.
Mm-hmm.
And then some people who are sensitive, like me, it will start to weep. The sting site will weep. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then a good thing to know is that you scrape it with, go find a credit card and try to scrape the area.
Oh.
It gets rid of the nematocysts and then hit it with some vinegar and it helps to neutralize that.
Oh. Or get somebody to pee on it.
They say that, but the vinegar is the thing that works.
Oh,
and
is
then,
it? Okay.
But you know what does work is hot water. And so there could be something, some benefit to the warmer temperature of the pee.
Yeah.
But
I
it
see.
Ain't the pee.
Not the pee. Yeah. Oh, okay.
But anyway, that's a jellyfish rant. But be careful out there. Just the next week or so, this season is just, for whatever reason, it's massive. But
so do you think, I mean, is it going to keep going? Or are they going to?
I don't know.
Wow.
I really want it to go away. And,
yeah,
and I'm happy that they have lots of phytoplankton to enjoy. Or is it zooplankton that the jellyfish are eating?
No.
Zooplankton.
Susan, did you have more you wanted to enlighten us with?
Oh, really, that, no.
When is the
come
festival?
See our booth.
It's do. Come.
July 17th is when we'll be there.
Okay.
I had a phone conversation this morning with a friend of mine whose name is Joan Schrammick.
Okay.
And she is an activist with Sound Water Stewards for Island County, which is Camino Island.
Oh.
So she was just kind of filling me in about all the stuff that everybody's doing. And she said, you know, there are 30 plus teams in this area that report to Washington State and the Department of Health about whether or not the water is the algae bloom, that kind of stuff, and how the water's doing. And then the Department of Health, after they turn in their reports, decides if the seafood's safe to eat.
Ah.
But she cited an article in the Seattle Times by Linda Mapes. It's Lynda Mapes.
She's great.
And yeah, she is a really good writer. And, her article was about how tiny specks bring big hope that the ocean is improving after the devastating blob. Do you know what the blob is?
No, let's hear about the blob.
Well, the blob happened in like 2014, 2014. Back when God was a boy.
I kind of like the 2:14.
Anyway, it was back then that waters warmed. It started in Alaska. It started up way, way north, and the water just warmed, and this blob of warm water made its way down to the California coast. And it caused all kinds of trouble with, you know, the growth of plankton and algae and all the things that the sea needs because the water was too warm. And according to her now, there's big hope. She doesn't cite any actual specifics about, you know, percentages, but it's part of Northern California's current ecosystem survey. And they're coming all the way up here, and they're devising an array of devices to measure the plankton and find out if it's, you know, 328 feet under, or is it, where is it? What's it doing? And how is it responding to the cooler water?
Interesting.
And what she's finding is that, you know, looking for the tiny things that feed fish, there are more of them now than there have been.
Oh, that's good news.
So that's really, really good news. And what else did she say? Well, that's about it. Long story short, she says all signs point toward a cool and productive ecosystem this year.
All right.
Wow.
So that's pretty incredible. And that's from a woman whose name is Jennifer Fisher. She's a plankton ecologist at Oregon State University.
Awesome. So that makes me wonder, is that just something that's happening because it happens? Or is it that we are actually beginning to make a difference in the waters? Are we starting to cool?
Yeah, I wonder.
Or is the ice melting and that's cool water entering the oceans?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's probably more.
I'm going to stick with the hope.
Yeah, that's true.
Let's stick with the hope today.
I bet you're right, Heidi.
Just a thought.
But, you know, she's talking about how a high-resolution, what do you call it, thing? Microscope. Thank you. Can show you what life is in water. She said, if you take a cup of water and look at it under a microscope, you'll just be amazed at
all
the life in it.
Well, that brings me back to our booth, because we're going to have three microscopes.
You are?
Here, and we're going to have one that has a camera.
Oh, that's cool.
Speaking of cameras.
Yes.
Heidi, you were going to tell us about Amy Carey's camera.
Oh, yeah. Sound Action.
Yes, Sound Action. Sound Hi, action. Amy Carey.
Amy, soundaction.org, and there's Jill.
Hi, Jill.
Oh, well, she's gone. We have an interesting camera that's out off of Point Robinson. It's not that deep or far out. It is so cool. You can actually go to YouTube, and if you put in Sound Action camera, you can find the camera. And it has some footage of past takes, such as a flounder, octopus.
And there was one I saw where a crab came up to the lens of the camera and was ticking on it, knocking on the door, trying to figure out what it was. So he really was trying to figure out what that was. I know he was. It was wonderful to see.
I tried to swim over it when I've been out there, and I couldn't find it, but our friends found it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty
How
neat.
Fun. Well, right now, I'm sorry to say it's in disrepair.
Yes.
Oh. They're not sure what happened, but it'll be up and running again in 2 weeks. And there's going to be... now I lost my train of thought because I was distracted
by a beautiful woman.
By a beautiful audience. Woman at the yes, door. Yes. Hi, Jill Bulow.
But yeah, that's so cool. And we should actually donate to the camera cause too. They're taking
yes, we
donations.
Should.
How
yes,
do we do
should.
That?
Soundaction.org.
Yeah. Yep. And the YouTube question. Is YouTube/SoundActionNW.
Boom.
And you can find the YouTube channel there. That's their own YouTube channel.
Oh, that's so neat.
So, yeah. You know, she said, one thing I loved when I talked with Amy about it was, she said her regular diver
is
gone. And I just thought, who has a regular diver?
Yes.
You know, I just
one
loved
of those
that.
On staff.
Yeah.
My
yeah,
diver. Really.
Yeah. I loved it. So anyway,
right
I just.
With my pool boy.
Sound Action is doing some pretty good work.
They are. I mean, they're all about shoreline habitat restoration and remediation, and it matters a lot.
Yep,
it
matters a lot. So, and then beyond that, you know, there are any number of organizations whose mission is water. You know, we have the Water Protectors.
We do.
Native Americans and all kinds of interested people trying to protect our water in the world.
WEC Protects, that's Washington Environmental Council. We did an English Channel swim and we raised money for WEC.
Oh, wow.
On our last swim. And there's a Soundkeeper Alliance. Trying to think, there's a couple. There's quite a few that come to mind. And obviously, right here on the island, Vashon Nature Center is doing some cool stuff.
Yeah, they really are. They really are. Didn't you go count baby salmon or something?
I went with Bianca Perla.
Yeah.
We went off Tahlequah. It was a really murky day, and we didn't see a ton, but... Oh man, that woman, she has a sonar on her head.
Does she?
She's on like a snorkel and it's super murky. And she's like, oh, can you see the little thing, the barnacle critters popping up? I'm like, where? I don't see it. And I swam here all the time. I felt so ignorant because she was spotting every little tiny thing in the murk. And I was like, oh my God, so bad. I need to come and do more of these with Bianca.
I'd love to do that. I think I'll do that next year. You know, water, if we're talking about water as water is life, which is, you know, if we don't have it, we're going
to
die.
You are preaching to the choir.
Yeah. And so one of the things I find really interesting about water is how people use it in ceremony or history or that kind of thing.
Yes.
Have you ever done any ceremonies in or around water or about water?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
There's a...
I don't remember any. I might have been, you know.
You might have, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Water is life.
Mm-hmm.
Well, here's a quote from an Ojibwe woman.
Mm.
For me, the gathering of water is a symbol of the essence and meaning of a woman's gathering. It is a tapping into the collective groundwater that flows among us, the collective energy of the goddess, the liberating, transforming power, which is in each of our sisters and in the sister within our brothers.
Ooh, I like that.
So,
and
is there more?
Well, no, I just was going to add that she says that quantum physics has finally caught up with what the Ojibwe have known all along. Water is life.
They're like, duh.
Yeah, well, duh. Yeah.
So I got to swim in Lake Superior, and we did a Red Cliffs night tour with the Ojibwe.
With the Ojibwe,
they run it, and it's super cool.
It's way cool.
And they have little glow sticks, and they're telling the stories, and they actually had a water ceremony, and this group came out to a dock. And it was just a family, and the woman was banging the drums and singing. And it turns out the women are the boss.
They are. Well, they have, their whole society is around women, and
so
they're
cool.
A matriarchal tribe. And the women keep control of everything, and even the quality of their product. When I went, I'm babbling here.
Nope.
I went to Minnesota several years ago. And was studying with some Ojibwe there.
Okay.
And they took me out in their canoes, and I got to help harvest the wild rice with them, which is quite something in the water. It's not really wild rice. Really, it is grass.
Okay.
But they take their canoe, and your canoe is in these tall grasses, and they have like an oar kind of thing that they reach their arm way out, and they bend the grasses into the canoe, and then they beat it. And then all the little seeds, the little grass, the rice falls out onto the canoe.
Ah.
And so then when they have enough in the canoe, they go back in and unload that and come back out. But there's always a ceremony before and after. So I got to go with them to do all of that.
Oh, that's cool.
And then to the place where they dry it and package it and send it out. And so that they're very much into water. That's their life, is the water.
I had no idea that wild rice came from water.
Yeah.
But I guess.
Think about rice patties.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Duh.
Yeah.
In the Midwest, it's such a thing too. And with the tribes, and we get the tribal newsletter. David's a Chippewa Indian. It's an Ojibwe offset. And so we get that. And here's another thing. Gretchen Whitmer, Michigan governor, you know, Enbridge, I think, was trying to put Line 5 renewal underneath their lake, and fought back hard.
Yeah, right, they won.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's not just Native Americans. You know, we could go into Lakota and all of them. They all have water ceremonies, but one that fascinates me is voodoo.
Ooh.
Oh yeah.
They believe that water is it lives. The realm of spirits lives in the water, and the magical qualities attributed to springs, rivers, and waterfalls are what make the magic. And the custom of pouring water over altars at the beginning of every ceremony. They pour the water over the altar. They're cleansing, but it's also for the voodoo practitioners a way to summon the otherworldly spirits.
Ooh, I like that.
And it, you know, they use it as a spiritual power for initiations, for funerals, for if someone's lost, secret societies with supernatural means to appropriate the magical powers of aquatic genies that live in the water.
Ah,
so I love
neat.
That.
That is, and look at all the time you spend in water, Heidi. You must be surrounded by magical.
You are. I bet.
Spooked for my next swim.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
You're never alone.
And then I have some more. You want to hear some more?
More.
Okay.
So in Gambia, the Diolas, which is a tribe, believe that there in the beginning there were two gods. There was Amontong, who was the god of drought. And there was Montogari, the god of rain. And purification is inexorably linked to the Bambara people and the Diolas. It wards off malevolent forces and protects the initiated. And some other exciting news is that in 2017, now we're switching gears.
Okay.
The government of New Zealand recognized the ancestral connection of the Maori people to their water. And on March 15th in 2017, the government passed this law that's written in Maori, and I can't read it, but it provides personhood for the river, because the river is a person to the Maori.
I believe I recall way back in the nether worlds of my brain that here in Washington State, someone has submitted legislation proposing to make either the land or the water to grant personhood.
Wow.
Oh, my goodness.
Because this says the river now has come to be recognized as having all the rights, powers, duties, and liabilities of a legal person. It's a person.
Like a corporation.
Yeah. Oh, corporations are people? Is that it?
We like rivers as people much more.
I think we do. Yeah, I think
we do. The more you study water, the more you, I think, begin to pay attention to your personal relationship with water, like how much you use it and how you use it, how we use it without thinking.
Absolutely.
I think about, you know, if you're brushing your teeth and you let the water run, don't do that.
I want to take a quick break.
Okay.
But when we come back, I want to pick up on that conversation.
Thank you.
This portion of Voice of Ashon programming is brought to you by PSCCU, proud to be Washington's Green Credit Union. Practicing socially responsible banking by supporting sustainability, job creation, local economies, communities statewide, and our environment. Learn more at psccu.org.
Can't do what we do without our underwriters, like Vashon Market IGA and Vashon Plaza, one block west of the main highway, where you can find everything your family needs, from fresh produce to kids' specials, legendary meats, wine, spirits, and movies. Open daily from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m.
Kind of on the same track, Susan, that you were saying, how it makes you very mindful about your water usage.
Mm-hmm.
There's a book that came out a few years ago called Blue Mind. It's written by Wallace J. Nichols. And he talks about all kinds of things, from how we use it, mindfulness about water, why it soothes us, and the neuroscience behind it.
Oh.
And so it's very anecdotal, but he really does do the whole spectrum about what water means to humanity. So it touches on some of the indigenous bits. It talks about just ceremony and his own, he got hurt on a hillside, and he ended up going out into the water and learning to surf and just really making that part of his healing ritual. Then he talks about PTSD and how that's been therapeutic, and he's part of a movement to help people with PTSD.
Wow.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh.
You know, there's something that any of us here on Vashon Island can do that is very soothing, and it is, I think, this time of year. If you go out on a kayak at night when there is no moon,
okay,
and put your paddle in the water,
there's a nocticula.
Bioluminescence.
Yes.
What's it called?
Nocticula.
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 You put your
a
paddle
cousin
in
of
the
Dracula. Way.
Sorry.
I've come to show you life.
I want to bite you on the neck.
It is
like putting your paddle in the stars.
Oh, oh wow.
It's so and it beautiful. Is so stunning.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Talk about
oh,
I have to do an that. Uplifting experience.
I have to do that.
I'm not sure. I'll try to find out exactly the right time.
Yeah.
To do it.
You're totally right. It's like a new moon.
Yeah.
When there's mm-hmm. new moon is no yeah. moon.
Right.
So,
right.
yeah,
right.
that is the time. That's so cool.
Yeah.
Perfect.
We are we're surrounded by water. How lucky is that?
Oh, gosh. Funny story. Once my son was coming to visit me, Ryan was coming to visit, and they were lost. They couldn't quite find this house. We'd rented a big house on the beach.
Ooh.
And we couldn't find it. He couldn't find it. The rest of the family was already there. And so he called me and he said, okay, Mom, I'm at yada, yada, and yada, yada. And I said, oh, I don't know what to tell. Just go toward the water. And he said, Mom. Because I was thinking, I'm
it's
looking at the water.
Everywhere.
You know? It's everywhere.
He's like, big help. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Mom. So do you guys know about the International Council of 13 Indigenous Grandmothers?
Why no?
No,
they're from all over the world, and there are 13 of them. They're Maori, they're African, they're Indian, they're from literally all over the world, and it's elders. And their mission, one of their missions, is to help the waters of the earth. And they take on lots and lots and lots of causes. They're a very activist organization of grandmothers, but they talk about how to use the water for a blessing and how you can bless the water while you bless yourself.
I love it.
So in case you're interested, it's very easy. You just prepare a bowl of clear water, or if you're not by the water, you just prepare a bowl of clear water, or you go stand beside the body of the water.
Okay.
And then you pray for the water in apology for having been a polluter and for having taken it for granted. Hold both of your hands toward the water, and from your heart, the energy will be projected into the water through your hands. And please hold the intention that the vibration which now fills the water will spread to the waters all over Mother Earth. You may then add your own prayer to the water or meditation, and then put a little bit of water on your hands, and with a loving thought, sprinkle the water away from you, as in spreading seeds, and then drink the water with a feeling of gratitude. We thank all those who join us and pray for the life of water for our future generations.
Yeah.
Isn't that beautiful?
That's wonderful.
We can do that.
Yes, we can do that.
Everybody can do that.
It's just, it's gratitude. It's simple gratitude and, you know, trying to offer some help to our beleaguered waters.
I wonder how we could get invited to join the 13 Indigenous Grandmothers.
I wonder what happens when one dies.
They have to have a replacement.
They have to have a lineup.
Yeah, they do. They
grandmothers
do.
Look
you
cute.
Should look them up on the web, Susan. It's just beautiful.
Yeah.
And all the different indigenous tribal wear.
Fantastic.
It's just fabulous.
And yeah.
They're words of wisdom. They're good writers. Some of them are artists. Some of them are doctors. Some of them are housewives. You know, it's just, it's a beautiful organization. They have lots of causes.
That is fantastic.
It's so nice to know about these things.
Well,
that there are people out there who are doing everything they can, one way or another, to help us as a species.
Yeah,
improve and heal. And I honestly, okay, this is me being, I don't know, sentimental or woo woo. I honestly believe that that kind of thing, when you get a whole bunch of souls together,
I believe
focused
it too.
On the same thing, it moves something.
It does move
it
something.
Does.
It does. It's collective energy. You can't deny it. I mean, people do deny it all the time, but but you can't. It's not valid to deny that.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
I love it.
I'm thirsty.
I'm hungry.
You're a stock of water. I know we're getting hangry.
Well, I'm watching all these people go by eating ice cream.
I know. It's very hot at Vashon today.
It
this
is hot.
This town is alive, you guys.
It is.
It really is.
You know, that kind of brings us back to the COVID thing because people are out in droves.
I know.
They ain't no masks on.
No masks.
Right. Sorry.
It's kind of strange. I'm not totally comfortable with it.
I'm not either. I don't go anywhere on the weekend.
It feels a little odd to
we
see
we have condoms
all
on our mics still.
I know. I know. Let alone masks on our faces, you know?
That's so crazy. So, I'm getting ready to go swim across the English Channel.
Yes, tell us about that, please.
That is happening on July 22nd or around July 22nd, depending on when the tide cooperates. But I have to go leave to quarantine the way things are looking, unless Monday's travel outlook that comes from the government of the UK, unless they decide they're going to come up with a new protocol. That's my only last hope that I don't have to go quarantine.
Well, maybe if you're vaccinated, it'll make a difference.
They're pushing for countries that are, that have the, like the double vax. They're pushing for these quote unquote amber because they're doing a red, yellow, green system. Mm-hmm. So US is currently yellow, but those countries that have a high vaccination rate are possibly going to get green lighted this next announcement to be able to fly in and not have to quarantine for 10 days, but still have to test.
Oh, well, that's fair.
So how is this is a relay that you're going to do?
Yeah. So it's a 6-person relay, 5 women, all from Puget Sound and one gentleman from Puget Sound. And 2 of them, if we must quarantine, will fall off the team, making us a 4-person relay.
Makes it a lot longer.
Yeah.
It makes it a lot harder and you have more rotations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so you get a little more achy. And we wanted to blaze across the channel, which means with more swimmers, you can do that because you have more chutzpah. Mm-hmm.
More refresh.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. So
you don't know yet.
So I don't know.
Worst case scenario, when do you have to leave?
On the 9th of July. I see someone I just sold eggs to today.
And have you swum the English Channel before?
Or
I thought you did.
Yes, yeah.
And so how different is the water?
Oh, it's the busiest shipping channel in Europe. So it creates a lot of oil on the surface. And all of my white lined bathing suits were completely coated in oil.
Oh,
ew. It was really gnarly.
What about your lungs?
Yeah. What about
and
my
your
mouth?
Organs? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And there was a lot of diesel off the boat.
Ew.
So.
That's not what I was looking for.
Okay. So compared to Puget Sound, there's a lot more salinity in the water because you don't have all this snow melt that gets in the water. So even though we're swimming in salt water and it seems salty, go to San Diego or go to the English Channel. It's way saltier. So you're more buoyant. And but the water is definitely much more yucky.
Is it colder?
Oh, yeah.
Lots colder, I would think.
It's warmer than Puget Sound, but colder than San Diego.
Is it?
So it's warmer than Puget Sound.
61.
Oh.
That's tolerable.
Is it?
Is Puget Sound, what's the temperature right now?
56. That's, on a good day.
It's brisk.
On a good day. Mm-hmm. It's more like in warm pockets. Yeah. Maybe Quartermaster Harbor's about 56 or 7. And out there, like at Dilworth and Glen Acres in the north end, it's about 53. Yeah.
Yeah, I know some kids who were swimming off Docton yesterday.
That's warmer. Yeah. It's a little warmer. But you still got to have a really thick skin. So
I like to put my feet in it.
Yeah.
I mean, then I can stand it, you know?
Totally. You're right.
It's pretty cold.
Some people ease in. Mm-hmm. The skin swimmers, they'll ease in and meditate, and then they'll go for it. And then there's some people who just go.
Just go, yeah.
And that's incredible to me.
I've never been a just goer person from even jumping in the pool. No.
No.
I have to ease my way into
it. I tend to be a jump person.
That doesn't surprise me. You're always jumping at something.
How I've run my life, actually.
It's a testament to your character, for sure.
We should talk about that sometime, Susan. Jumping into my life.
Yeah,
Be careful out there, you guys. There have been some drownings in the local lakes.
Yeah,
and
I
adults. Know. It's not kids. It's adults out on floaties and stuff. They just don't.
And that's been attributed to the cold water.
Yeah, cold shock.
So jumping in probably isn't a really good idea.
It's not even that cold in the lakes compared to the Puget Sound.
Well, somebody just drowned. A little boy just drowned in Lake Washington. His dad jumped in. The dad drowned.
Trying to rescue the little boy,
but the little boy had a life jacket on and the dad didn't.
It's so sad.
And so I just thought that was one of the saddest things I've read.
It's just been, it's so weird. So, I mean, it's good to expose yourself in little fits and starts.
But be careful.
And definitely be careful.
Yeah.
But it builds your tolerance much more if you just go and take a little dose of it. And
well, guys, we're out of time.
Yeah, we did.
Thank you for listening. And we hope.